Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation with three locations in the Denver metro area. Tonight's author on tour is Lisa Daly, who reads from and discusses her new book, 15 Minutes of Shame, published by Plume. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a moment. It's time to begin.
Good evening, and welcome. On behalf of the Tattered Cover Bookstore, I'd like to thank you for coming to tonight's event and for your support of independent bookstores. Tonight, we are pleased to have popular dating advice writer Lisa Daly read from and discuss her first novel, 15 Minutes of Shame. Lisa is a dating coach, speaker, and popular media guest. Her first book, Stop Getting Dumped, is a dating advice bestseller. She has done more than 2,000 interviews on radio and television programs such as iVillage Live, MTV Live, and Entertainment Tonight. She's been quoted in hundreds of publications from the New York Times and the Chicago Tribune to Cosmopolitan and Glamour. And women across the country flock to her Dream Girl Academy and events across the U.S. Please join me in welcoming Lisa Daly.
I'm blushing now from that little cheering section in the front. And if you notice, if you're not related to me, the three people over there, my mother, my aunt, my daughter are all wearing little Dream Girl Academy shirts. And my son back there, Quinn, he's wearing a 15 Minutes of Shame shirt. So there's Quinn, and there's Elle, and there's my wonderful husband, Tom, and pretty much everybody here. You all know each other, so that's a good thing. That's a good thing. So thank you very much for coming. I really, really appreciate the support. I'm just touched by it, so I'm trying not to cry because this is a podcast. And, you know, the sniffling would be so, so, so bad. So a lot of people have asked me why I decided to write a novel, because I wrote a nonfiction book, Stop Getting Dumped. It sold pretty well. And it's sort of funny, the day before Stop Getting Dumped was going to come out in bookstores, I was at this big bookselling convention, and I'm all excited, and I'm sure my life is going to change, and I'm walking around with this big sign that says, get dating advice here, and I've got my brand new agent that I've had for, 3 weeks, and I'm really feeling cool. And we're walking down the hallway, and she spots this other agent that she knows, and she says, hi, how's it going? And it turned out that the woman was an agent for a very prominent dating expert, someone who had had a mega best-selling dating book and had just gone through a horrible, horrible divorce, and she was just getting creamed in the media. I mean, just creamed. She sort of trotted herself out as this kind of perfect, I know everything, and when she went down really hard. And her agent says, oh my gosh, it's been horrible since the divorce. And I just remember standing there with my newly minted dating book, and I'd been married for like 3 years, thinking, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? What was I thinking, putting my personal life out there for the whole world to, have an opinion about? And it terrified me. And I thought, when I write, I think about the reader as one person that I'm writing to. It's a friend or my mom or my husband or someone that I care about. And so it feels like a really one-on-one personal experience when I write. And it's hard a lot of times for a writer to imagine that about a million people or 100 people or 1,000 people are going to read what you've written later, because it feels like it's a one-on-one thing. And that was really, really scary, that realization. And so I sort of took a little stock and thought, okay, well, I have a good husband, and he's a nice guy, and we have a good marriage, and so it's probably, and I'm not going to drag him out on the Today Show and put a collar on him. So I figured I probably would be okay with that. But it intrigued me for a long time, because this was 5 years ago. It intrigued me, the idea of how you survive public humiliation if your whole life and your whole career sort of go down in one moment. And so that is the topic of 15 Minutes of Shame, which is the story of a TV dating guru. Where did I get that idea? A TV dating guru who finds out that her husband is cheating on national television. And her whole life just sort of comes crashing down. She's the person that everyone takes advice from. She's got a radio show and a TV show. And she's got these best-selling books. And she teaches the Dream Girl Academy. And she has created this whole life of telling other people how they too can be happy. And then the whole thing, the bottom just falls out of it. And it's in the most public way possible. And then, of course, something worse happens to kind of add to the humiliation. So I'm going to read to you a little bit from that part. So you'll know just how bad she's got it. Just how bad. And a really talented and knowledgeable author would have marked the page instead of flipping through it. So the chapter that I'm going to read is chapter 5, and it's she's really excited. She doesn't know yet that her husband is cheating, but she has this sort of inkling. She's caught him. She thinks she saw him when he was supposed to be out of town, but she thinks she saw him. She's not quite sure. She's done the rifling through the desk thing, but she sort of talked herself out of the idea that he could be cheating on her. So she's about to go out on this book tour, which I can't even imagine having to leave your family for several weeks or months thinking that your marriage might be in jeopardy, but it's her job. So my flight leaves at 7 a.m., which means that the taxi driver will be outside my house at 5:30, which is just too damned early. I double-check the 7 pages of instructions and notes on the kids' schedules that I've written out for Miss Vivian, our babysitter extraordinaire, surrogate grandmother, who will be watching the kids while I'm gone and Will's at work. She's wonderful, and Lily and Aiden adore her. Planting silent kisses on the foreheads of Will, Aiden, and Lily as they lay sleeping, I sneak love notes under their pillows. Will stirs, groggy from sleep, and says, "Darby, good luck on the Today Show. I know you're going to be great. This is a really big moment for you, and I'm really proud of you, sweetheart." I kiss him softly on the forehead one last time before I go, rolling my monster red suitcase down the driveway to the waiting cab. And when I say going on tour, most people get this really glamorous idea of 5-star hotels and limousines and formal wear and ready-made entourage and non-invasive paparazzi hanging around your hotel to take a picture from your very best angle while a handler whisks you from party to interview to party, and every author's fantasy, a book signing with throngs of adoring fans. Thank you very much. The truth is that most authors don't even get to go on a book tour. I was lucky enough to get 15 cities because my agent, Holland, is a shark, a sweet-smiling, smartly outfitted shark dressed to kill in dramatic African jewelry. The reality of a glamorous book tour is that you either A, take a flight at the crack of dawn, or B, show up in the airport the night before, take a cab to a Ramada or some other similarly ornamented halfway house for business travelers. In the morning, an author handler named Marge or Betty will pick you up in her late model Toyota with used Starbucks Grande cups and McGriddle wrappers littering the floor of the passenger seat. Marge will know all the gossip on every author on tour over the last 5 to 20 years, and she can tell you who's nice, who sleeps with the bookstore managers, who takes uppers before she does the local morning show, and what best-selling spiritual author let his ratty little dog poop in the back of her car and didn't even offer to clean it up. Marge will have slung over her shoulder a giant tote bag obtained free at a book fair, stuffed with whatever she's reading, a knitting project, bottles of water, a wrinkled, marked-up copy of your schedule, and at the very bottom, a cereal bar or a bag of airline peanuts, which she'll share with you if you've had a really long day and you haven't had a chance to stop for food, or if you're not that author who let his dog poop in her car. She'll drive you to a radio station to do a morning drive show, or a local TV station to do Good Morning Little Rock, or Good Morning Tupelo, or Good Morning wherever the hell you are. And we'll sit patiently in the waiting room while you do your 6 minutes with a host who is graciously small-talking with you on the air, despite the fact that he doesn't know or care who you are or what your book is about. Then Marge will drive to your bookstore signing, where even if you're well-known, you can expect to sit at a faux wood table, looking a lot... Actually, this is a real wood table. It's a really nice table. Looking a lot like those survey people at the mall, hoping to God that at least 10 people will show up so that the bookstore manager won't believe your appearance and, frankly, your existence to be a complete inconvenience and utter waste of her time. Typically, you'll just be sitting around for 2 hours trying to catch any customer's eye as they enter the store so you can psychically will them to your table. Mostly, though, you'll be giving directions to the bathroom. Whenever there are breaks in your day, you and Marge will hit the drive-thru for coffee or sandwiches and then drop in at the bookstore en route to your next gig, where you'll introduce to as many unfazed bookstore employees as possible and offer to sign any copies of your book they happen to have in stock, which, if you're a first or second-time author with a major publisher, will probably be one. After you sign the single, lonely copy, they'll rummage around in the desk for one of those gold foil signed by the author stickers to slap on the front. And after your day is done, Marge will drop you off at the airport. You'll grab a quick slice at Sparrow before your 9 o'clock flight, and you'll head in coach to your next glamorous destination. All right. Now, I'm just going to skip right ahead here. She sleeps all night. The next morning, she's got to fly off to New York City. My author escort, a 40-ish Italian woman called Babs, meets me in the lobby at 6:45 and tells me the car and driver sent by the Today Show is already waiting outside. And just a few minutes later, we arrive at the studio at Rockefeller Center. I'm in awe, but Babs, who has been here a number of times with dozens of other authors, seems unfazed and escorts me through the entrance over to the guard desk. A 20-something blonde production assistant carrying a clipboard appears to retrieve us and whisks us through the hallway back to the green room, which is, interestingly enough, not the least bit green. Why is this room called the green room, I ask. Nobody knows, Babs replies with authority, but you'll never find a green room. Really, I ask, thinking she's, kind of pulling my leg. She smiles and raises an eyebrow. It's bad luck. Lovely. Just then, another energetic production assistant appears. She introduces herself as Mackenzie, offers Babs and me coffee, and tells me she's here to escort me to the makeup room. Thank God. After only 4 hours of sleep and not nearly enough caffeine, I definitely need professional help. I ask Babs to hold my suit jacket so I won't wrinkle while I'm in the makeup chair, and follow Mackenzie down the hall, flipping through my note cards, powering down my phone so it won't ring while I'm on the air. We've all heard the saying that a TV camera adds 10 pounds, but no one tells you that it makes the important parts of your face blend into a puddle, like your eyelashes or your chin. It usually takes a couple of really terrible appearances before you realize that the key to looking like a human being while appearing on television is to tart yourself up to look like a hooker. Page Six columnist Paula Froelich calls the look TV tranny. I think it might actually be some sort of secret initiation process into the wild world of television, like hazing. It's why amateurs look so bad and professionals look so good. False eyelashes, black eyeliner, 7 pounds of lip gloss. I learned my most important lessons in TV makeup when I made an appearance the same day as Rachel Weingarten, a celebrity makeup artist I met in a Philadelphia green room. She informed me in the nicest way possible I was about to appear on television with 6 chins and did an emergency face fix 5 minutes before I was going to go on the air. Okay, true story. 3 minutes later, I had a visible smear of bronzer encircling my throat, rendering my double chins invisible to all in TV land. I look like a recently strangled streetwalker with really expensive shoes. Trust me, she said. You look fabulous. And I did. The Today makeup show artist is clearly on board with the whole hooker equals normal plan. And I emerge from the makeup room, freshly spackled and ready to be mic'd. Mackenzie pops by to warn me I'm up in 8 minutes, and I ask her if I have enough time to make a quick stop at the ladies' room. The green room sink is out of hand soap, so I make a dash to wash my hands at the makeup room sink next door. And I'm about to meet Matt Lauer, so this is not exactly the time to skip on the hand washing. I turn the cold faucet a half turn to the left, and I'm immediately blasted in the face by an out-of-control water sprayer. Water shoots all over the room, drenching me and most of the staff, before a quick-thinking guy armed with a hairdryer wrestles the errant hose back into the sink and shuts the thing off. The shampoo sink. The hair and makeup staff stand back with their mouths agape, trying hard not to laugh at me. Just then, Mackenzie pokes her head out into the room. You're on in five. She does a double take, then puts her hand up to her mouth. Oh, crap. My pale pink T-shirt is sopping wet and now transparent. The eight coats of painstakingly applied mascara run in black rivers down my face. And a single false eyelash sits perched on my boob like a spider. My shoulder-length red hair, which I had spent half an hour meticulously straightening this morning, looks like it's been caught in a car wash. Mackenzie snapped into action. She's in the chairs with Matt in 4 minutes, folks. Dryer Man, the saint who had mercifully turned the wretched sink off, comes to my rescue again, drying the front and most of the back of my hair, slicking it back into a chic knot, while both makeup artists go to work on cleaning up the damage done to my face. Mackenzie stands in the doorway, eyes glued to her watch. I need her on the set in two. Done, the makeup girls say. What are we going to do about her clothes, someone asks. There's no time to find her a different wardrobe. I need her on the set right now so she can get mic'd. I have an idea that seems simultaneously moronic and genius at the same time. I've got a jacket, I say. Can I just wear my shirt backwards? That works if you can do it while you're walking. Otherwise, you got to go on wet. I follow Mackenzie hurriedly to the set while slipping my arms out of my soggy shirt in that bra trick we all learn in college. And as I put on my jacket, the sound guy snakes the microphone wire underneath and clipped it to my lapel about 5 seconds before we go on the air. I flop into the chair next to Matt Lauer just a breath before he begins to introduce me. With us on today, we have best-selling author Darby Vaughn. She's got a new book out this month on how to snag the man of your dreams. The book is called The Dream Girl Academy. Welcome, Darby Vaughn. Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show, I say enthusiastically. So what made you decide to write another dating book, asks Matt with just a hint of a grin. Well, I say, easing into standard interview territory, I've always been the one who gave dating advice to all my friends, and now all of us are happily married. I think it was a combination of two things. It's really fulfilling for me to help other women find relationships, and once we got married, I really miss the girl talk. Matt leans forward, his eyes fixing on mine in that sort of brain lock that all really gifted interviewers share. The one that makes you forget you're on TV and feel like you're just sort of chatting with your friendly neighborhood mind reader. You said you're all happily married, he asks. Yes, I respond, pausing, not quite sure if there's another question coming or if he's wanting me to elaborate on marital happiness. His eyes crinkle for a brief second, and he says, what do you have to say about the article that appeared in this morning's USA Today? Gee, Matt, I joke, kind of hoping you'll give me a little more to go on. It's a challenge when interviews bring up some obscure article or study without warning, expecting you to be able to comment on it intelligently without actually having read it. I give him a big smile and say, I have to say I was so excited about appearing on the Today Show, I didn't have a chance to read the paper this morning. He says, the article states that your husband, publicist Will Bradley, is filing for divorce, and he's reconciled with his ex-wife, Gigi Passanti, former Miss Arkansas and the star of the hit reality show Castaway. A representative for the couple confirms the report. Do you have a comment regarding your impending divorce? The room starts spinning, and my stomach begins to lurch. I press my lips together as quickly as I can, the bile pushing its way through my body as I try to will it back into submission. Panicked, I scramble to reach the only thing I can see, a small basket of chrysanthemums on the coffee table in front of me just a nanosecond before puking up my entire breakfast live on national television. And then everything goes black. When I come to, I'm lying on the floor wedged between the Today Show couch and the Today Show coffee table with an ice pack under my head. Mackenzie and several other staffers huddle around me, and as I look around trying to gain my bearings, I can see from a nearby monitor that Matt, Ann, and Al are out on Rockefeller Plaza talking about the weather. An intern is standing by with an unopened first aid kit and a bottle of water. Matt's question echoes in my brain, and I feel the room go woozy again. The last thing I hear before everything goes black is Babs' nasally voice asking,
"Is she all done? Because I got to get her down to K-Rock for a 9:30.
I am not an actress, so I'm sorry. So that sort of sets the scene for what happens. She finds this horrible thing out. She's blindsided, and the book is about how she picks herself up and recovers from this public humiliation with grace and finds a way to get her career back on track. So it's a fun story. They're going to make it into a movie, which I'm really excited about. We sold movie rights. Yay! And a lot of, some of the stuff in the book is true. I can hear my mom sort of laughing when I was saying the stuff about I always miss the girl talk. That's something that I have been saying in interviews about this book for a really long time. And it's interesting. I get asked a lot how much of Darby is me. And a lot of her is me. As far as I know, my husband is not planning to dump me on national television. And she's, hey now. Well, as far as we know, not this week. Okay. And there are lots of parts of her that are me. I think she's a bright person. And I think a lot of times, smart women and smart men sort of use their brains instead of their hearts when they're thinking about love, and they really want to think through everything and logic through everything, and if I can just solve the problem, everything will be fine. And sometimes you just can't do that. So thank you very much for coming. I'll be signing books afterwards, and I think they're coming up to tell you that. Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on March 28th, 2008.